Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Force Center podcast feed is the Clone Wars Report. I was hoping for clown music, circus music. This is such an exciting arc. It's got everything. It has Jedi philosophy, it has lightsabers, it has pirates, but most importantly, it has the tears of a clown, a Gamorrean clown. I remember the first time I saw that, then somehow I forgot, and I saw it the second time, and it was like it was like tasting chocolate again for the first time. Like you forgot what chocolate tasted like.
The tears of a clown. Yeah. Yeah.
So good. So good. Excellent circus music. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw. The person making circus music is Ken Nabsok, and we are excited to dive into this next arc that we are discussing of the Clone Wars animated series. Ken, you have any thoughts about our journey so far?
Journey so far, just overall in Clone Wars?
Yeah. We're getting into this part of, you know, season five where it's like it's kind of daunting to prepare each episode because there are multiple episodes. But then you just like look back and we're like, we've only done 2 episodes of our podcast about season five, but we're about halfway done with the season.
Yeah, that's a lot. Look, kids, be careful how you grow up and chase your dreams. I always hated book reports in school.
And now we do Star Wars book reports and Star Wars Clone Wars reports, which are like book reports. And it's actually a lot of fun. But yeah, this was a lot of notes, a lot of themes, though at the end of the day, I boiled this one down to some simple themes. But the overall journey of the Clone Wars report has been so wonderful for me personally. I bring it up a lot, but these episodes are real, like, kind of signposts on that road. Mm-hmm. I was excited to revisit these and just kind of revisit my feelings about the episodes then and now, and a lot of fun for this one.
Ooh, yay. I'm very excited to get into this because this has always been one of the ones I enjoyed when I was watching it through the first time. Next arc, we'll get into the old D-list, the droids, the D-squad. That'll be a fun discussion and a fun revisit. But for now, we are talking about the Gathering arc. It is Season 5, Episode 6, The Gathering, written by Christian Taylor and directed by Kyle Dunleavy. Season 5, Episode 7, A Test of Strength, written by Christian Taylor and directed by Bosco Eng. Season 5, Episode 8, Bound for Rescue, written by Christian Taylor and directed by Brian Kalen O'Connell. And Season 5, Episode 9, A Necessary Bond, written by Christian Taylor and directed by Danny Keller. Again, like in the Saw Gerrera arc that we watched, the Ondran arc, all the same writer, and then just a murderer's row of Clone Wars directors.
It is. Yeah, I love all these names. And I never really lived with these names before, you know, just by watching and loving the show. And this is another thing. When you go back and revisit, you can look at those details.
Yeah, and I know that many of them continue to work on Rebels and Bad Batch, so I can't wait to see what other names continue to pop up. But for now, we're going to head into our summary. Once again, this summary for me, Ken, was a failure. I tried to keep it relatively short. I skip many events, but the scope of these four episode arcs are long. So I'll try to get through this as quickly as possible while still doing it at a pace that is enjoyable. So here we go. Jedi tradition. Jedi Padawan Ahsoka Tano guides six younglings to complete a sacred ritual, the construction of their first lightsabers. The younglings, Petro, Ganodi, Biff, Katooni, Zat, and Gungi, or Gungi, yes, depending on the character, right, are met on Ilum by Jedi Master Yoda. He instructs them they must venture into the crystal cave and find the kyber crystal that calls to them. But they must also race against time to make it out before the ice wall blocking the cave freezes over. Inside, the younglings face their flaws, impatience, doubt, fear, selfishness, and more. They all emerge victorious with their crystals, a successful trial, but wait, there's more. On board the Jedi cruiser, the Crucible, the younglings meet Professor Huyang, an ancient droid who has guided many generations of Jedi in the construction of their one true ally, the lightsaber. As the younglings struggle to calm their minds and use their intuition to complete their blades, danger strikes! The Weequay pirate Hondo Onaka attacks the Jedi ship, desperate to acquire the kyber crystals, which will sell for a fortune on the black market. As the pirates board the ship, Ahsoka devises a plot to use the vacuum of space to flush the pirates off the ship. She instructs the younglings to hide, but fate and hubris intervene. The younglings must face the real and harrowing challenge of fighting the pirates. Through a mix of pluck and invention, the younglings survive. Ahsoka takes on the pirates and successfully kicks them off the ship, but at the last moment, she too is swept off the Jedi ship into the hands of the pirates. Upset at the loss of the crystals, Hondo decides to ransom Ahsoka instead. The younglings call the closest Jedi for help. Obi-Wan Kenobi, no stranger to being called for help, answers and attempts to dispatch Commander Cody, but Kenobi's fleet is assaulted by the vicious General Grievous. The younglings put the time to good use, though, completing their lightsabers. Except for Katooni, who feels she needs more time. The damaged Jedi ship must land, so the younglings decide to rescue Ahsoka on the pirate planet of Florum. Using their Jedi skills and impressive teamwork, the younglings pose as circus acrobats working for Prego's traveling world of wonder. They infiltrate Hondo's party and find the vicious pirate very clearly drunk off his Weequay butt. They rescue Ahsoka, but Hondo's pirates give chase. After a valiant attempt, the Jedi cruiser is destroyed and the Jedi are recaptured. But wait! In the meantime, Grievous's forces have overrun Kenobi's fleet and made planetfall on Florum. The Separatists are taking over the planet. Hondo gets a holocall from Count Dooku, making it very clear this is revenge for that one time Hondo held Dooku for ransom. Ahsoka and the younglings convince their pirate captors to work with them. Together, they rescue Hondo, who holds valuable information about the location of his secret fleet that will get them off the planet. Hondo bonds with young Katooni, encouraging her to complete her lightsaber. The teams are separated. Hondo and Katooni make it to the secret fleet and board the rebuilt fire spray attack ship that Aurra Sing crashed on the planet many moons ago. Katooni appeals to Hondo's honor. Everyone trusted him. And the pirate gives in. He flies the ship to the rescue. Ahsoka holds off Grievous long enough for the Padawans to board the ship. Hondo and the Jedi rendezvous with Republic Fleet, where Kenobi compliments the Padawans on completing such a difficult trial. They touch lightsabers. It's beautiful. The end.
Big applause.
Thank you. Oh, thank you.
Some of your best work. Some of your best work there.
You say that every time. It's very kind of you. It's very kind of you.
You keep raising the bar.
Well, it's really fun to boil down. The reason that I started doing the summaries is because I really do feel like it's important in the analysis of these episodes of like, what are they actually fighting for? What triggers the conflict, right? Sometimes with the Jedi, are they attacking or are they defending? Are they in doubt? If it's a Padme episode or a Mandalorian episode, like what true valuable political ideas are at stake? And then it's really fun to just truly boil them down to the essential plot beats. And sometimes you discover there are a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a helpful reminder at the start for me more than anyone. Just like, yep, that's right. I'd love to track. But anyways, it's not easy to do. It's kind of like writing a treatment for a screenplay you just written, 120-page screenplay. I can't write one page to summarize it.
Boil it down. So it also helps me just kind of really pull back and try to see the arc, the story in the big picture. Yeah. Let's talk, though, overall reaction. Do you love it, like it, struggle with it? It sounds like you maybe struggled with it back in the day.
Yeah, I've always loved the Gathering episode, specifically that one. I've always loved that. And one of the reasons just it introduced this new lore in such a compelling way. And I never thought too much about lightsabers. Yes, you can make the references to my old, I was here for the war more than the lore of the Jedi and all that kind of stuff. But I just, a lightsaber is you go to the Jedi store, you buy one, you lose it, you buy another, right? Like, it's just kind of how, that's all I thought, the thought I put into it. And more obviously started to emerge and the importance of it. It wasn't that I didn't feel lightsabers were important. New Hope took care of that. It states it pretty explicitly, I think. And then some of the stuff, Attack of the Clones and beyond. But it was something so new and I never thought about it in this way. And it was so just epic and mythic, really, almost like Sword in the Stone type of stuff with these crystals and kyber crystals were always just kind of a weird trivia thing to me, there's this thing called the kyber crystals. And yes, there's other things out there. Like I think Jedi Quest, I was looking up some of the spots where Ilum first appeared and everything. There's other EU stuff that dealt with some of the lore. Me, Ken Apsok, didn't until this episode. The other stuff, it's not even that wasn't my favorite. It's weird to look at the time. This is coming off the Onderon arc number one. And that was some of the biggest stuff and pew, pew, pew. And wow, man, war. That's why I love Star Wars, the fighting, for me. But also just the broadcast of this was November 2012.
Wow.
The sale had happened. And
wow,
my head was more in that space. And then you sit down and it's like a circus. What am I watching here? And so I haven't revisited these as much. I've seen them since then, but this is the first revisit since those episodes. So it wasn't even that I didn't like it. It's not like a Riff Tamson thing. It's just like, I just kind of wasn't thinking about Clone Wars. I was thinking about new movies.
Right.
Different time.
You're sort of like, okay, yeah. This show's going on. It's doing its thing. Sometimes it's cool and there's a lot of action. Sometimes there's just kind of weird stuff. And come on, Han, Leia, and Luke are back. When's that going to happen?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, everything here is fine. And that's why when we get to some of it, like favorite action, like there's way more action than I remember because I just remember a circus, right? And it was 2012, weird time, November. Like it's fresh.
Yeah. Wow. That's so amazing. I love hearing your perspective, having actually watched it since I didn't watch it as it was broadcast. And I watched it in this voracious speed binge, speed gobble in 2014 and was shocked to discover how much I was loving it. By now I was absolutely in love with it. Loved The Gathering episode, that one really stuck with me, I think, because of all of the lightsaber lore. I remember somebody gave me, this was probably like early 2000s, close to when it first came out, the very first Star Wars visual dictionary. It's a pretty slim volume, but it's got the picture of Luke's lightsaber, and it's got like, here's the Kyber crystal. And like, yeah, I'd read about crystals and, you know, various books or, you know, online things or whatever. I was kind of aware of that. There's a crystal and a lightsaber. But this one had the, like, you have to use the force to get it in there. Like, not anybody else can just construct a lightsaber. It requires the force to guide it in. That's what the visual dictionary said. And I remember just being like, that's so great. That's perfect. This is a Jedi's weapon. Like, Han might be able to wield it, but he can't build it. So I always loved that idea just from one little piece of text on a visual dictionary. And then this one went so much farther and created... at least in like traditional main Star Wars canon, so much that that has been built from about the sentience of Kyber crystals, their power, about Ilum, all this stuff. So it's kind of hugely important for Jedi lore and Jedi philosophy, this arc.
Yeah, and I don't want to say this is, I wouldn't describe anything in here as a change, right? Especially based on what you're saying from the first visual dictionary. But with the Sith having synthetic crystals and that kind of becoming this concept of bleeding the blade, and I think it was the Ahsoka novel, right, that kind of really first put that out there. Mm-hmm. I understand if you were like, and I knew the synthetic blade thing, even though I wasn't steeped in EU stuff, and it sucked to lose a trivia answer. But I really liked the way they dealt with the new one. It just seemed right that the Sith just dump all their rage into the blade. That just works for me. So the Gathering doesn't change a lot of things, but for me, it introduced a lot of lore. And it just got me thinking about lightsabers in a way I had never thought
before. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, there is, you know, from that review we did of the Gennady Tartakovsky original Clone Wars, like, you know, there's Ilum stuff there, there's crystal stuff there, and it's great. And I love that it's presented very spiritually, but it's also like super action and they're defending them. Right. And this was so much more about that great fantasy of, even as an adult, I was able to put myself in the mindset of a kid, right? And that it's about this journey of going in there, and I'm going to have to face my flaws and the anxiety of like, well, a Kyber crystal will call out to me and I just have to trust that. There's nothing I can do. Like, I remember that episode giving me anxiety on my couch as a very much adult in 2014. So yeah, that specific episode really does speak to me, but I really love the whole arc. I love how much it's kind of the high fantasy side of Star Wars. Everything from crystal caves, sacred planet, you know, how to make mystical swords work, pirate attacks, wandering troubadours and theatricals. You know, as a longtime theater performer, I love seeing performers. I love seeing the circus. I'm fascinated by how Star Wars changes over the years, because there is parts of this that feel like it is responding to Harry Potter, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that was some of it, too. Again, not that I didn't like it, but back then it's just like, all right, you got the Onderon arc so steeped in real world history, so steeped in war and conflict. And then you got Jim Cummings doing a very real world take on an old school circus boss, like he's, you know, head Wizard of Oz, you know, like I just didn't know how to react to that back then. But I second around, I really agree with you. It really just fills out this galaxy.
Yeah, it's Stephen Stanton doing Prego, right?
I thought it was Jim Cummings, but maybe you're right. No, well, I'll double check that.
Okay, yeah.
I would never want to take a credit away from Stephen Stanton.
I know. And yeah, I always try to grab the
You might have, yeah,
credits, I might have looked, I might be wrong. I might be wrong on that one.
Oh, because wait. Does he, I might have looked up and he does, doesn't he do Hondo?
Yeah. Yeah, Jim Cummings is Hondo. Yeah.
That's what, sorry. Oh my God, Steven, I'm so sorry. He doesn't listen anymore, at least. I'm so sorry. You're right. It's Steven Stanton. And
okay. I just did not want to concern any of the Steven Stanton stands out there.
You know, it's oof. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
No problem. There's so much to keep track of in old Star Wars. Yeah. But yeah, another thing I like about this arc is that it is so it's clearly showing that there is a trajectory and a plan with Ahsoka, right? She has been learning, growing, leveling up, facing her own flaws, coming to her own conclusions throughout the show. But this season is really aware of where she is at really positioning kind of her story as the spine of this anthology series. And to see her at this place where she is still a Padawan, but she's the wise mentor to younglings now, and even has great moments where she knows the bad choices that they're going to make, because that's what she would have done. You know,
yeah.
Such great, great growth from Ahsoka heading into the finale of this season. And these episodes have grown a lot for me, particularly Ilum, because and even Professor Yang, because now they're even more in the Star Wars world, right? Like, we get to play through these areas in Jedi Fallen Order. There's some relationship to Hu Yang's stuff with the actual lightsaber rebellion experience at Galaxy's Edge. It's really immersed in canon.
100%. And he's not yet shown up in High Republic, right? But he definitely deserves to be there.
I think he's been mentioned, right?
Yeah, mentioned. You're right.
Yeah, which is good. Final thing for me on the kind of big picture, I do like that this is sort of Clone Wars cleanup, right? If at some point they're going to be like, we've kind of done a lot of things with Hondo. What is his morality? Let's deal with that. Hey, wouldn't Dooku be really furious about being held for ransom? Hey, didn't we crash the Fett ship? Should we do something with that? There's a lot of it that feels like, let's go back for that.
Yeah, and I can't wait to discuss the Hondo of it all. So many Hondo thoughts, and you're absolutely right about reminding it's truly serialized here.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the moral of the episodes. Four episodes, four morals. Here they are. He who faces himself finds himself. The young are often underestimated. When we rescue others, we rescue ourselves. Choose your enemies wisely, as they may be your last hope. All right. This is where we often get to hear lessons from Little League baseball coach Ken from years past. What spoke to you in these morals?
I think the most important of these morals, and the one that, again, when I broke down the themes, there's a lot of themes and a lot of episode, right? There's a lot of episode in each episode, if you know what I mean. I really, at the end of the day, kept the themes pretty simple. And to me, they all generate out of the first episode, episode 506. So that moral of he who faces himself finds himself, they who face themselves find themselves. I really love that one. I get that one. And I think that's, it's so crystal clear in those episodes. Oh, hey, not a pun there on Christmas. no wordplay for me. I do, though, enjoy Choose Your Enemies Wisely, so may you be last hope. It makes me think of, I don't dislike my neighbors, but I don't talk to them. But if an earthquake hits, we're all in this together.
Yeah.
So be careful.
Yeah, no, I like that one is very direct as to what happens in the episode, but it is also like a little bit of a different way for me to say that great Star Wars, we all have to work together sometimes, which is kind of a thing that they talk about in this story arc. Yeah. I was really affected by when we rescue others, we rescue ourselves. Obviously, that ties to the actual episode. But to me, that's just such a big part of Jedi philosophy, right? Like, the Jedi can talk about being selfless, right? And that is a part of it, of like, hey, if we were on a planet and we were starving, the Jedi would give the food to somebody else. Or if they're in a situation where they are protecting someone and someone has to die, there's no way out, the Jedi would step up, right? So there is an element of selfless. But this philosophy of, we are all connected to the Force. We are symbiotic. We are symbionts. So what happens to one of us affects the others. I really see that in that when we rescue others, we rescue ourselves. I think for me, it does tie into real world beliefs, which I don't need to get too deeply into. But this idea of not when we help others, obviously it often makes us feel good. So there's just that. But there's also that, like, a lot of things that we perceive as somebody else's problems, if you help them, it actually makes things better for everybody. And you are a part of everybody, you know? Yeah. So I think that one really touched me because it touches on a lot of beliefs that I've been thinking about a lot in real life, as well as Star Wars philosophy.
It speaks to compassion and empathy. Those things seem to pop up in Star Wars a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, not us versus them, but just us. So let's get into the themes, the ideas at stake in these episodes. You said you had kind of boiled it down for yourself. A lot of complex things in these episodes, a lot of just episodes in the episodes. What were some of the big ideas you pulled out?
Yeah, the big one for me in a series that is about hope versus fear. You get to join these younglings on this path of growth, which is a hard path of growth. And I love in the beginning, they're all so excited to build sabers and kind of cheering. Yay, we get our weapons, not knowing the lessons ahead. It's not easy. That's something that's pretty important. But I just boil it down to overcoming fear. Now, a fear being this kind of all encompassing term. And it's I think fear, you got Gungi learning patience. You have Petra overconfident, selfish for glory, not purpose. You got doubt and Gnody, Zat with frustration, anger with tech at one point, which I agree with, understanding, even though he's a tech master, but trusting himself versus the tech. Biff is the more direct fear. It's about finding courage, but all that dumps into the fear bucket for me. And Star Wars being about hope versus fear, finding hope within the fear. And those are things that are going to derail you. All those things are going to derail you towards that us, towards that great us, towards these bigger goals. And I think from here, it's not that the other episodes don't introduce new themes, but I just think the other three episodes are built on what they all started to learn here. And now it's this real unplanned practical application of these lessons and themes.
Yeah, no, I really agree with you. I think that first episode kind of sets up a lot, and then it is explored both in kind of real world terms rather than structured trial terms. And it I think, starts to kind of explode out to other characters in fascinating ways. Mm-hmm. I think at the biggest big picture, you know, trying not to get lost in the weeds, but remind myself to kind of take a step back. I think the biggest thing is that it is a coming of age story, like a lot of Star Wars storytelling. But what I really like about it, and what I think makes it different and exciting, is it's this coming of age story where the manufactured trial, that the relatively safe trial that the mentors set up to challenge the young people, very quickly become real trials. We're like, it's nice that you learned those lessons. I'm so sorry. You're going to have to apply them or die. Possibly. I love that that's made, you know, crystal clear in the second episode when Katooni, perhaps like the most, you know, emotional and maybe vulnerable of them, at least in her voice performance, which is so good, where you see the pirates are attacking and she says, "Is this part of our training?" And Ahsoka's just like, "It is now."
Well, you know, you and I are kind of a tracking of this journey of the Jedi trials of just, when do we actually see them? And to my knowledge, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm often wrong. You know, there hasn't been a documented canon version of here. A stopwatch is out. Here's the trials, right?
I think there's some reference to them. Reference. Maybe we see a little bit of them in the Dooku audio that Kevin Scott wrote. But a lot of times that we see it in canon, it's like that, well, that wild thing happened out in life and everybody agrees that was your trial.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I just keep laughing. And you're right. It's like, I believe the trials exist. I believe they're out there somewhere. There's a pole vault event. You go underwater with Robert Pattinson and Harry Potter. Like, there's things you do to compete and get your trials. But I just love that in a way, we don't ever really need to see them because this is what matters, the real trials that are going to pop up for these Padawans in action.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just, for me, I love that manufactured, relatively safe trial. It doesn't feel safe. The emotions are high in that first episode, becomes the real trial. And then it leads into this other kind of big picture idea about, you know, hey, that's a thing that Jedi really need to accept. This is kind of one of the things, one of the reasons that they try to accept that they can't control everything and focus on what they can control, is that life is going to surprise you and you need to adapt. And Ahsoka's got a couple lines along that line. She says, "We're going to fight, just not the way the pirates expect."
Right.
She's all about adaptation. And then, you know, once the kids risk their lives, break the rules, don't listen to Ahsoka, don't listen to Kenobi, and rescue Ahsoka, she's got that great line of, "Well, I've learned from my master that sometimes doing the right thing means bending the rules." Which, you know, I think at one point in my life, I would have taken that as like, yeah, bend the rules.
Right.
It's like a cool thing, but more that just sort of like, look, we can manufacture a trial for you, but that's not the way the galaxy works. The trials are going to come up in ways that you do not expect. No mentor is going to set the stakes. It's just going to happen, and you have to be able to respond to it.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, so I'm laughing there about that. Yeah, at one point you could be like, "Yeah, no rules, indeed. The Jedi Order sucks, man." And I just think, calm down.
Yeah, exactly. I want to get into some bigger themes and see how they align with what you think. I really do think this, that you're so right about fear. It's all the different facets of fear that the younglings are experiencing. But I felt like there was this overall idea within that of facing your true self, right? Mm-hmm. That each must face their flaws to find their crystal. Like it almost felt like the crystal itself was partially calling to them because it was situated in a place, in a way to challenge the part of them that is perhaps a flaw yeah. that they need to work on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost annoying. Like this crystal knows me too well. It wants me to do this. Yeah.
Right. I mean, I'm having both a fun and a scary time imagining where my crystal would be, which I have been since the first time I saw this episode of what would that cave do to me?
My crystal's going to be like, there's so many things I can throw at you. I don't even know what to do.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think my crystal would be like, we're 72 of us and we're all saying that you could, we could be yours. And like, you have to decide. That goes along with Yoda's great line about you said we would be trapped. He said, but not by the cave, but by your mind. Mm-hmm. So the whole cave thing is about the finding the crystal is about facing your true self. But then there's also so much about intuition. A lot of them have to follow their intuition to find the crystals. Yeah. We learn that lightsabers are not designed by what's the sickest design, but what is instinct, right? That they need to be designed and constructed by trusting yourself. And that's one of those things that always just, it sounds like good advice or just like, listen to your instincts, trust your gut, follow your intuition. Mm. But I really feel like what Star Wars is saying with the Jedi and getting at that is, you know, calm your mind, get rid of maybe some of the other voices or some of the society will laugh if I do X and listen to you and you only in that moment. Mm. And I feel like that is following your intuition is a version of facing your true self.
Oh, absolutely. I love that episode, the first episode with literally a path where many doors are in front of you. Your instincts are going to lead you forward and only you can know which crystal is yours. It does speak to not just agency and control of your life, but knowing you got to know. So which crystal's calling? It's some instincts there. And that's going to move you forward, man. Big stuff, big Jedi lessons there. And I love the often trapped by our own minds. Oh my God. I forgot that detail. So I was a little, man, are they going to just leave these kids in here? Like I could not remember for life me how the episode ended. And when Yoda's like, oh no, you can push through the ice, that's never been a problem. You're the one that's going to tell yourself you can't push through it. So,
yeah, you just assumed that from the way we laid it out, which I think that one is debatable too about if that's a great mythic trial. I don't know if everybody would agree with that as like, say, parenting.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. I will not presume to have an opinion about that one, but I really like it from a storytelling perspective and a, you know, question things perspective. But in a way it is Petro not only facing his true self in terms of getting past his competition and his selfishness to go help Katooni, but then also like that's a part of who he is, good, bad or otherwise. He is brash and is gonna shatter and break things, you know, that's who he is.
I'm glad you said that. You know, he learns a powerful lesson. I get it. And then he runs ahead and he's the one. He's a little selfish, like I said, a little bit for glory more than purpose. I love him getting kind of put in his place by Yoda. But yeah, he might have been the only one to break through the ice in that moment. For like, you know, others, it's a great spiritual concept there to learn to trap by your own minds. But I think he's the only one that's going to be like, I'm going to do this. Boom. Broke it.
Yeah, he did it. Yeah. And, you know, obviously their story in that first episode is laid out pretty well to the point of, you know, Yoda listing, you know, the mm-hmm. things that they learned and overcome. I think maybe just one of my favorite moments is I do love when Katooni says, what if I get up there and there's nothing? I'm like, are you moving to Hollywood, Katooni?
Oh, the pain.
Embarking on any long challenge, right? What if I get up there and there's nothing? I was like, oh, too close to home, youngling.
Yeah.
But then just on this idea of facing your true self and to support what you were saying, I like that as the episodes go on, most of them do kind of make the most of their flaws, like Petro blowing up his inverted matrix lightsaber, Zat embracing tech, Genodi using her flight skills, Biff seems to get in more and more brave throughout. But then the thing that I thought was really interesting and tied the story together for me, Ken, is I felt like ultimately, this was a story mainly about these younglings, but then Hondo kind of slowly became the main character. Mm-hmm. in that I think this was about Hondo facing himself and asking these questions of how far will he go for profit? What is the consequence of his greed? And, you know, Ahsoka asking him again and again, like, well, who are you today? Because, you know, sometimes you're like this horrific monster who's willing to do anything. And sometimes you're a silly fun uncle. It was almost like Ahsoka saying, like, could you narrow out your character, narrow down your character, Hondo? And, you know, in this crucial moment that he does show honor and help Katooni when she pushes him and says, everyone trusts you, you know? I thought it was meaningful that Hondo is, you know, also the one who tells Boba Fett that, you know, his father did work with honor too. So I thought that was great that Hondo had to face himself the way the younglings did.
No, well said. This is key Hondo stuff. He's a bad man at times. Does bad things, says bad things, you know. You can't overlook that, but I love the moment. Some of the sweeter moments in Star Wars that I've watched recently is this episode, right? Great stuff and Boba Fett, everything sweet stuff. I love that. I love the moment with Katooni at the end there. And I agree with you there. A little, you know, the younglings shall lead you.
Yeah. So how do you take that? Is Hondo's character, why do you think that he made that choice? Obviously, he bonds with Katooni. He encourages her while she's building her lightsaber. There's a little bit of a comedy moment where he's like, oh, that's amazing.
Right.
And you know, it seems like he can convince himself that this is in my best interest, you know, and I think he even has a line along that path of, hey, look, I need all these kids working and fighting, so I'll boost this one up and because that's going to be better for me. But at the end of the day, at that moment when he's walking up the ship ramp, he could just leave, right? And leave the Jedi to rot. And Katooni probably yell at him, but what's he going to do? Why do you think he turns around?
You know, even Hondo gets the idea of trust being violated and how bad this honor in him. I just think it's... I think when you're looking at the big theme here, pirates, Jedi, younglings, the galaxy, they're all fighting one evil, and it's the endless pursuit of power. And he's been playing in that power game. And I just think he has a moment where he sees the bigger picture. He looks in her eyes and sees the bigger picture and gets it.
Yeah. I think for him, if he is somebody who is leading a kind of tortured life, swinging one day, as he describes to Ahsoka, like, one day I'm big on profit, the other day I'm like kids. So one day I'll horribly threaten children, the other day I'll kind of do anything because I melt my heart. If he is kind of aware that he's in this tortured state, he's just really had a lot of loss. You know, he says, I know I can't trust the separatists. I know Dooku really hates me. I know my time's coming. Oh, it's here. I don't think he's in love with the Jedi, but I think he recognizes, hey, if a war was coming, they will actually defend me. You know, even after I have messed with them, they would still save me.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's faced Grievous at your door. It's the downside of the deal you made with these devils. And even he's smart enough to get it. But, you know, we don't know much about his past. We don't know where Hondo went wrong. Maybe one day find out. And look, it's not like he joins the Republic the next day. We don't see him fighting with the Rebellion later on yet.
No.
Yet. Who knows? And I love that about Hondo. That's one of the things I think have come to grow about him. He is who he is. But like Finn eventually had a face, you know, after DJ's telling him maybe it doesn't all matter. It does. Choose to decide. And I think there's a little part of him that gets that.
Yeah. Gets that this is going to be better for him in the long run. And just that idea of like, I do, when you push me, I do value my own honor. I did tell everybody that they could trust me. So, fine.
Yep. without that, what does Hondo have? Nothing.
So I got a couple other ideas of themes that were laced in here, but I want to hear about yours as well. What else do you got?
Yeah, a couple of the big ones that reflect the larger story for me is this idea we love talking about a lot here of just this everyone matters, younglings, droids, even pirates. There's something to be said for that. Again, talking about this everyone fighting one evil, this endless pursuit of power. Absolutely true that everyone should matter there. I love, too, there's this overall, you mentioned a little bit, fighting is brought up a lot, and fighting for survival and keeping with knowledge and defense, those big things. But there's also just... I kept thinking of Obi-Wan saying there are alternatives to fighting and different ways to approach it and how they have to take what skills they have, where the situation they're in, and they're still bold enough to do it, to go save Ahsoka out of that kind of good compassion, I would say, good attachment. I mean, I don't think there's bad compassion, but bad attachment in the Star Wars terms, you know, and but they had to find the way to do it. It wasn't charging ahead. It was becoming an acrobat team.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think there were a lot of picking your battles, deciding exactly what you fight for. The idea that lightsabers exist to defend others, you know, yeah. kind of clearly stated. That we get to see from Obi-Wan's perspective that he has to accept that the ship is lost and, you know, pick in a dangerous moment what he's fighting for. Hondo chooses to fight for honor. I don't think it's a big point of the episode, but it is a continuation of the character Grievous. That it is a great reminder that all he cares about is proving that he's the best warrior, right? When he's just yelling at the ship, like, he can't be beaten. Never. Yeah. Like, yeah. That's all he fights for, you know? As if somebody just told him, like, hey, we all, the entire galaxy agrees nobody can ever beat you in a fight. He'd be like, great. I can tie up my cape now.
And always running away.
Yeah. A couple other things that I really thought the episode underlined that I wanted to talk about briefly is connection and working together. Like, obviously, that's in the morals that we're talking about. But it's emphasized so much in that first episode. Ahsoka talks about entering the sacred Kyber caves and says, together and only together can we enter. And they, you know, use the Force to get in. Yoda says, trust yourself, trust others, and succeed you will about their trial. And then, of course, that gets tested with Petro initially refusing to help Katooni, learning his lesson and going back for her. So that's all there and pretty straightforward in the first episode. But then I like that it's built throughout the arc that once the real danger starts, the younglings pretty consistently work as a team, you know. Yeah. Petro's got a little bit of the wants to be the leader, but he still puts things to a vote. They vote to save Ahsoka, right?
Right.
They literally work together as the acrobatic act, the animal instincts.
That's hilarious.
Which is great. Get a lot of visual images of it. Like when they try to escape to the ship, it's this that chain of holding each other. and the eventual, you know, twist that the Jedi and the pirates have to work together. And that line of, we have a common enemy in Grievous, together we can get out of this. There's just so many ways that it is supported. It's shown as not just this, you know, a motivational poster that Yoda slaps on the walls of the Jedi Temple.
Yeah.
And it's not just present in the sort of controlled setting of Ilum. It plays out throughout this adventure as they get into real life danger.
Absolutely. Yeah. Big Star Wars theme as well. And just, again, going back to the first episode, laying it all out and then just taking out the practical application of the galaxy. I absolutely love that. And the key to victory later on in the galaxy.
Absolutely. And final thing for me is, this wasn't as big of one, but I thought it was really interesting that it was laced into the way people talked about things, the way characters talked about things. Which is a lot of this theme of what is the essence of things or people. Like, there were a lot of statements about what things truly are. Yoda said, the Force made physical, a Jedi is, which is, that's kind of a big line, right? That's our response. He says comes great responsibility with that. Yes. That idea of that, like, we are the Force, all of us together. And that's why Jedi aren't just like, hey, go use your power to, you know, move the TV remote closer. You know?
Right.
But it's a responsibility. Yoda says the heart of a lightsaber, the crystal is. Huyang says lightsabers are a Jedi's only true ally. Hondo has a bunch of different lines expressing what things are. He says kyber crystals are profit. He says Ahsoka becomes the possibility of profit. Dooku says to Hondo, everything you own is now property of the Separatist Alliance. So it seemed to me like it was this kind of push-pull where a lot of the bad guys were saying, like, the value of a thing is what they can give to me. And the Jedi having all of these different philosophies of, like, what's the heart of this thing? We're really trying to examine what it is, what it means, and why it has value.
Yeah, and then, all you know, the Jedi, it starts, the news thing up top starts, the Jedi important to the galaxy because they bring order to chaos. Just kind of the importance of even why we're spending time with the younglings for this arc, because we're losing Jedi. Big stuff there.
Yeah, yeah. So I really like that. I don't think it was necessarily meant to be the heart of the episode, ironically, but it was just some really powerful lines and some things that I definitely, some quotes I want to remember. The Force made physical, a Jedi is. That's a great one. I didn't write it down, but the one about like lightsabers are for defense, period.
Yes.
That's why they exist. You talked a little bit about how these themes in this arc reflect larger storytelling and morality of Star Wars. Anything else there?
No. And all, I wanted to ask your opinion, being a Jedi guy that you are there. Huang say the lightsaber is a Jedi's only true ally. I loved that. It's pretty like, that's pretty bold. Like, you know, you're out there on your own. This is all you got. It's your trusty weapon, but also just because what the lightsaber mean. Did you have, you have any kind of reaction to Huang there? Agree, disagree? All part of the picture? Oh.
I really liked it. I think it is, you know, you got to understand where the characters are coming from. And this is an ancient droid who spends all of their time with lightsabers. So look, of course, in a ranking of Jedi allies, Yang's going to rank lightsabers number one.
No, I
really liked it because I think sometimes when we talk about like Jedi possessions, they're not supposed to possess anything. Mm-hmm. We see different characters break that rule. Like Anakin's like Steve Martin and the Jerks. Like, yeah, I just have my lightsaber and this poster of a pod race and this and that and this. That's all I need. So you can kind of joke about it or see the Jedi is overly rigid. I think this is a really nice line for the philosophy of it is I am bonded with this weapon. It's not just a weapon. It's a symbol. I think it goes with, you know, with Obi-Wan Kenobi's, this lightsaber is your life. I think it goes with Ahsoka realizing the responsibility of losing her blade in Lightsaber Lost, that it is about defending people. You have a relationship with it, with the Jedi, the individual Jedi, but it is about defending people. Including the Jedi. So I think it all kind of tracked for me. I think Huyang's putting it on pretty thick. pretty heavy, but I don't disagree.
He wants you to get the upgrade and the lightsaber building experience, free tote bag with it, of course. No, I agree. I thought a lot of Obi-Wan there and how the lightsaber is used, what it represents to the people of the galaxy because of what the Jedi represent. Yeah, makes sense. Love that. Just wait. I want to get more of your thoughts on that. And I got it.
Yeah, I think there is the risk of, they have a lot of allies. They make out, sometimes pirates are their allies, but I think he's speaking more philosophically. Mm-hmm. Great concentrate on that line. I already shared some of my thoughts about the picking your battles. I think that's some great stuff. So unless you have any other big thoughts, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll get into all the little moments. Anything else from you?
No, other than, you know, Yoda, just next time tell me that the wall's not going to trap me and I just think it's unfair.
Good Come lesson. On, Yoda. Come on, Yoda. It does feel a little like a Yoda hosting a prank show of like, these younglings think they can't break through ice.
I love sassy Yoda.
Let's see if they can figure their way out of this. We will be back in just a moment for more Yoda sass.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome. Like, what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome. Like, what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And we are back to continue our discussion of the Great Gathering arc of the Clone Wars. We are going to talk some of the fun moments, some of the canon moments. We start with action. Ken, did you have some favorite action moments?
Well, first of all, I'm going to start with this overall thing here. I had forgotten that there's a big Grievous battle with lightsaber duels just in my memory banks. I was like, oh, yeah, circus tricks. So all I thought about it, and that's my mistake, and so happy to be going back on it there. I'll go. One of the first ones was Zap blowing up his smartphone to get his crystal. You know, kids, put down your smartphone. You'll find the way forward. But look, everything in my life's on my smartphone too. But anyways, I just love that moment. I know he's the one who understands tech, but I really love the use of blowing things up with tech.
I love the complexity of he knows to be intuitive. I believe it's he suggests using intuition, right?
Yep.
And then he's just so married to that tablet and it's failing him. And then he goes full office space on the printer.
Yes.
And smashes it and then realizes this thing that was holding him back can also be a tool in using it to explode the ice. Great.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
The other great action moment for me in that first episode is the Gungi slide.
Oh, I did too. I wrote Gungi falling and slide into the ice. Loved it.
So how do you feel about there are two pronunciations. I believe Ahsoka says Gungi and almost everybody else says a Gungi.
There's a few times. There's also an Ahsoka Tano and an Ahsoka Tano, apparently, this galaxy. I say Gungi, but you can even say Gungi. I don't know, but Gungi. I like Gungi.
I say Gungi, and yeah. Man, with the captions on, the number of times that Gungi vocalizes, heaven, great stuff. And the slide on the ice with the little Wookiee feet, so cute.
So great, yeah.
So what other moments of action going forward into this exciting, thrilling arc?
Yeah, big sequence, of course, with Ahsoka saving the day in the hallway and the airlock. But part of that, I love the training remotes used as weapons. Love that. Love that. You know, trained Jedi, and now they're turned against the pirates. It was fun.
Yeah, I thought that was like a great, like, yep. Well, we don't have lightsabers. We haven't been in fights before. This is scary. We're going to use our resources. And then just the viciousness of it, of the it's dark and all the blasts are going off. And again, with the captions on, it says men groaning. So there's all these pictures of the Jedi kids smiling. And then the captions say men groaning.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Pirates groaning.
That is absolutely great. In that second episode, I also like Huyang's headless, armless kick fest. I've never lost a fight and I'm not gonna now.
It's great stuff. Absolutely great stuff.
I remember the first time around, I loved Huyang as a character. I loved the idea of him. I loved them being shocked that a droid could be a part of this spiritual journey.
And of course, being voiced by David Tennant of Doctor Who fame and many other fames. But I always wanted him to be a little bit more kick-ass, and I was happy to remember that he does indeed defend himself.
No, I definitely agree with that. That's one of the one of the beats I forgot. An armless droid kicking pirates is it's good Star Wars fun.
It is. Yeah, and then Ahsoka Force pushing the pirates all around the ship has that real, like, okay, hero moment, right? Now they're chasing the Jedi around, and they think they've got, you know, they think they're easy pickings, and Ahsoka steps up with her bold plan and her big force pushes. It's pretty great.
Yeah, no, her whole sequence. And I had a couple thoughts of just, like, you were talking about, you know, positioning Ahsoka as kind of this main character in the Clone Wars and all that there. But just, you know, you're sending a Padawan off on this. And I think it's important you learn as you become a teacher. So you learn even more about what you know. So makes a lot of sense. Totally, obviously, trust this war veteran Ahsoka at this point. But I was just like, man, it's a Padawan and younglings. No night around. That's big stuff for all of them. I love that.
Yeah, I think it adds to the tragedy of her leaving the Order. You get the sense that Yoda knows that she's really special, and that this is an honor for her to be doing this, right? Like, she's getting really close to graduating, you know?
Yeah, right there.
Yeah, and I also just like I love the big force pushers, but I also like once the seals are broken and that she just is kind of, she's floating along and just continues to grab Hondo and throw him down. Yeah. It's just got a real, like, I'm taking the trash out vibe.
Love that.
It's great stuff. Moving forward, boy, I forgot that there was that much battle between Kenobi and Grievous's fleet, and going all the way through to kind of the horror of Grievous arriving and, you know, like he's done before, grabbing a clone, hitting a bunch of other clones with that clone, then crushing that clone. That is cool action moments, but a great contrast to where our younglings are at, right? Like, they're kind of taking these first steps. They are in danger with the pirates, but that these are the stakes. This is what they're being prepared for, is this level of horror.
Yeah, no, that's a great way to look at it. And you're right, it's intense, and it isn't fun. It's fun Star Wars action, I guess you could say, but, like, clones are dying. They're pulling them out of the wreckage. That Y-wing being destroyed. I forgot the intensity of it. Absolutely. And it's a little bit of a loss for Kenobi, right? And, you know, I know it works for the story. He's not gonna be able to save them, but it's just like, man, the Kenobi and his team getting his ass kicked means something. It's important level of defeat.
And I like the way it ties into the plot of Ahsoka knows, like, well, if the Separatists are here and Grievous is here, it means they, you know, destroyed Master Kenobi's fleet. And I also like that Kenobi's just like, there's even some pushback. I believe that's Cody who's like, I can't remember what Cody said. I didn't write it down, but Kenobi going like, no, I mean, the fleet's lost, but we're going to turn this loss into a victory with that great Kenobi self-destruction hollow.
Yeah. Oh, God. I call that the Ferris Bueller recording of, hello, I'm not home right now. Yeah. I'm sick right now. Yeah. Love that.
What are some other action moments for you?
Oh, wait, that fuel cell force toss / explosion with Rex shooting it. Ah, come on. That's just some choice Star Wars action.
Oh, that was really, really good. Yeah. Yeah. That was absolutely great stuff. I wrestled with whether to put this one in action or comedy, but I had too many comedy lines. I do like once the younglings do have their lightsabers, they are just in full on action mode against the pirates, but the Separatists, the moment where they attack the B1 droids, and the B1 droid reports, they're miniature Jedi. My knees.
Yes.
Absolutely great stuff. And then there's also that more heroic shot of, there's that double stab of a droid from, I believe, Petro and Katooni, which is nice since Petro, you know, is the one who almost walked away from Katooni to see them in perfect synchronicity. Katooni now feeling centered and has her blade working.
Yeah, love that. Love that. Lessons in action.
Lessons in action. How much you got some more?
I want to have that speeder chase, man. Looking at the final episode in this arc, just chock full of action. Action, like, again, didn't even remember. And I love the design of all the ships, whether, you know, they appeared in other things used before. It doesn't matter. Just a great collection of designs. I love the little speeder Grievous is on. the little forward control and everything. I loved everything about that. Really good Star Wars stuff. That again, I was like, oh my gosh, this was all here. I was worried about Gamorrean clowns, which actually I like, but it's more than that.
Yeah, I thought I really liked Ahsoka's brief standoff with Grievous, because at this point in the Clone Wars, you know, like, hey, look, a lot of people fought Grievous and held him at bay. It's usually Kenobi, not Anakin, for canonical reasons. But this was really great to show, like, okay, Ahsoka can hold him off, but he is a threat, right?
Yeah.
And you get that energy. I just particularly like when he's just advancing and she does that roll and spring back up.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, I love that.
It's so acrobatic, and it's kind of captures, you know, some good Ahsoka vibes of like, I keep springing up to fight. So I thought that was great. My final one is, you know, it's partially just hearing the sounds of those big cannons, but I love Fett's ship just pounding laser fire on Grievous as he curls into fetal position.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're so right. From the Aurra Sing crash to the rebuilding here, it's a great use of the ship.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I kind of forgot it was coming. And as they're heading there, it's like, is this, did I dream this? Or is that ship coming back?
Yeah.
Any more action moments or shall we move on?
No, let's go to some great comedy.
Okay, let's go to moments of comedy, whimsy, weirdness. Did you write down a lot? Because I wrote down a lot. I got to hold myself back.
Well, I had to hold myself back from Hondo stuff, which is a testament to this character that I'll talk about a little bit of a relationship with. But yeah, there's a lot of great one-liners all through these episodes.
A lot of great one-liners, a lot of great just kind of moments and moods. And yeah, Hondo's on fire between the writing and just the great comedic delivery. Hondo's,
yeah.
By the time we got to Hondo, I'd already written down too many, so I think I only wrote down two Hondo lines. I wanted to shout out in the episode where the kids finally do construct their lightsabers, that whole montage kind of fits into comedy, whimsy, weirdness, but also just kind of wonder, maybe. The music is great. You can just feel that they are in the right place, that they are waiting to be rescued and they're concentrating on what they need to do. It's a really beautiful montage. So I wanted to be sure to shout that out too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I like, I like everything about it. And yeah, we can make jokes about building a lightsaber at theme parks and everything, but that's why the theme park one works, is sequences like this where you just pulled in by it and you get the joy of the characters and it's lightsabers being built. I loved it.
Yeah. And the meaning of it. Yeah, so going into more specific comedy stuff, it's an older nerd joke, but it checked out for me. I love Zat sniffling. I was like, from my calculations, taking into account the planetary movement in these systems, the sun only rises on Ilum every 19 days. It's just a classic nerd joke, relatable moment from Zat. You're reading the facts and figures on his smartphone while sniffling from the cold.
Tech would be proud. Exactly. I love it. All the voice work is so great. Katooni too, but they do in a charming way have that, what you just wonderfully did there, of just that, like, I'm Katooni and we're gonna get through it. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, yeah, and all of them have great voices. Yeah, that
which
way.
By the way, my nose is more permanently stuffed now than it was as a kid, so I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
I have faith that you will be unstuffed at some point. In that first episode, I also like there's that great moment of they do use their intuition. They close their eyes and they point where they're going to go, and nobody's going with Biff.
They say,
sorry, Biff. Looks like you're on your own. And then Biff vocalizes.
I get Biff. There was recently headed out to the Comedy Store with some pals, and we were saying goodbye to one of our pals who was moving, and we were all going to walk down to Barney's Beanery, which meant we had a cross sunset on a Saturday night. Kenny doesn't do that. Kenny looks for streetlights and stoplights. And they all left, and I thought a couple of them had walked with me, and I turned and everyone had left, and I had to walk like 30 minutes out of the way to get to this restaurant. And I felt like Biff, like, you all ditched me. You left me to, because I couldn't face my fear.
Yeah, I mean, that really was that great vibe. There's something about like the comedy of it too, because like it's pretty straightforward, but a lot of them have kind of nuanced issues to work through, right? And Biff's issue is like, I don't have complex mental terrors. I'm bleeping scared.
There's an oven monster.
I don't want to be alone, and there are monsters.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just made the most of really humanizing Biff while also having some comedy fun with the fact of not hearing his words in English.
Yeah. Or yeah.
What are other moments for you?
All right. Well, yeah, getting to some individual lines. Well, you mentioned Kenobi's Ferris Bueller pre-recorded message did really make me laugh, especially when Grievous kind of falls for it. And then realizes, come on, sassy Yoda, a crystal you have found, water you have brought. Come on. That was hilarious.
That is very good.
And I want to know, okay, what Yoda's already there. Is he just have shifts where he hangs out on Ilum? Does he get there in another ship ahead of time? He's doing some meditation, get some work in before the kids arrive. I just love that he just there. I would have been like, what are you doing here?
Yeah, no, I like that. I like that it's Yoda's relationship with the younglings. Like, even again, you know, in the war, that's what he really wants to be doing is teaching the younglings. So he's like, oh, you know what? I'm going to surprise them.
That's also a great point. Yeah, we want him here. This is what he needs to be doing. And it's his passion, always has been. But yeah, there's a war on, Yoda. Come on. Come on.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's part of this arc, right? That it is a slight, it does not make you forget the Clone Wars are going on and that they're horrible, but we've had so many episodes, we got more of how the Jedi are failing, and it is nice to see Ahsoka and Yoda, you know, kind of Jedi with hearts of gold, still trying to do the right thing and keeping things moving.
Yeah, but again, the newsreel up top sets the importance of needing new Jedi and generations forward, so I totally get it. Yeah, but yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah, I love that Yoda's there and sassy.
Sassy.
Heading into some of the other episodes, I do like that they make the most out of Pedro truly being a leadership type and having that kind of personality, but also the comedy of just being like, you smug little. Like it when he's practicing and goes, I call that move the whirlwind of destiny.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you looking up the history of that, that was a fan contest win where a fan submitted. Hilarious.
I knew nothing about this. This is new to me.
Okay, yeah. So it is back then, there was some contest held of like, you get in the Clone Wars by you name the move. And then they animated the move, or maybe the move was animated and your name won. And that was the winner.
Wow. Well, hilarious. Well done, whatever child came up with that.
There you go.
Yeah. The other Pedro moment for me is when he's being cocky and saying, with this lightsaber, I'm going to challenge Obi-Wan Kenobi to a duel. And then the little bleeper does the Kenobi pose.
He does. And then, you know, I'm going to take out Grievous. Well, you get your chance later.
Yeah. Let's see about that. Also, just some, without dwelling on it, some great stuff of like, yeah, you're not really getting what that lightsaber is about, kid.
Mm-mm. Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. What are some more for you?
It's hard not to list all the stuff with Hondo. So, you know, I'll go to Katooni. He's got a line with Pedro after he built his lightsaber first. And he's all, yeah. I think you finish your lightsaber. Doesn't mean you know how to use it. Just love that lesson there. Going to what you were just saying with Pedro's lesson. Yeah, then, oh gosh, it does get to, I'm looking at my list. There's some good droid humor, right? After Grievous leads him, they die. But holy moly, Hondo on fire, man.
Yeah, yeah. I'll share a couple other and we can get into Hondo town. I liked everything Hu Yang says. I thought there was a lot of depth. I thought there was a lot of whimsy, but the one I particularly liked because it was just in the delivery when he was, did that great scene with a Gungi, telling him like, don't tell me what you want, you know, imagine it really in your hands, what fits. And, you know, of course it's the wood, which is great. And then he has the, where would we find that? All the way out here, far from anywhere, deep in space.
Yes.
Followed immediately by the multi-limb search, and there's a great like, oh, I forgot about that. Oh, that's not mine. It had that great like everything that you kind of want from the mysterious mentor. I think really reacting to Ollivander, the wizard, you know, helping finding the wands, but adding this Star Wars droidness and this Doctor Who voice to it is great.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Absolutely. Well done, David Tennant.
Yeah, and then a couple other things quickly. As I like it when Priego is prepping the kids, and he says, "The pirates are an unforgiving audience." It felt exactly the same way when I was doing children's theater. It's like the sixth graders are an unforgiving audience.
Nah.
Yes. And then when the kids do the flip in is the acrobat group. And there's so many moments like this where Ahsoka knows what's going on. Just like, oh no,
oh,
they're not posing. It's like, oh no. So great.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get into Hondo.
Man, I mean, pick a lie. We all know how much I like to be rich. Made me laugh. My mood is based on profit. Valuable lessons to be learned in that. I love that. I love the exchange with Ahsoka. You will wish you'd been born a protocol droid. Sometimes I do anyway. Just the old man energy of, I'd rather take a nap. I love that. They just drunk Hondo.
Oh, Lord.
When he's dancing and he's like, yeah, talk to me. It's number one, it's me at a wedding, but hilarious stuff there.
Yeah, I think my favorite one was maybe just because it's kind of a different style of joke for Star Wars of the, I may not be as young as I once was, but I'm older.
Yes.
It's like, did he forget to say wiser or just kind of lost the train of his thought? I'm flying, followed by the just, you know, comedy crash, the absolute slapstick. Buster Keaton smash up is great.
Him explaining why Dooku doesn't like him anymore, just really hilarious in some way. I like his pirate, one of his guys running in going, boss, we're all in trouble. And then he's shot dead.
It
made me laugh.
Yeah. Well, I smell profit from the earlier episode is pretty great too. It's a good entrance moment. I smell profit. Absolutely great stuff. The other one I like is even after they've forged their little bond, when Katooni's got her lightsaber working and hops on the speeder and says, I got your back.
Yes.
Great. It feels so safe.
Him saying General Grievous, I presume, is just being an a-hole about it. I love it.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely great stuff. Almost every line. Mm-hmm. Final thing for me, comedy whimsy, wonder. I've added that now. Weirdness. The oinking, grunting, as the subtitles say. Sad Gamorrean clown. I really do truly love that Gamorrean clown. Partially because I don't know if I just even missed it the first time I watched it. I really liked this arc as I was speed watching it, particularly the first episode. I liked there being performers. But this arc kind of holds a special place in my heart too, because there's this one panic moment. I don't even remember what year. I think 2017, where it was announced that Clone Wars was leaving Netflix in like 2 days. And my wife was out of town, and it was just like, I'm dropping everything and watching some Clone Wars. And this was the arc that I needed to re-see.
Yeah.
And I just didn't remember the Gamorrean clown was there. And I was just such in the right place to receive it of like, yes, this is the spirit of Star Wars, though. Why not? Let's have some fun in the picture of this very traditional clown, but it's a Gamorrean. I just love.
Well, the whole circus just being kind of built on these wonderful aliens all around the Star Wars galaxy, pod racers and Gamorrean. I just like taking those characters and put them in this wonderful, entertaining way.
Yeah, and kind of answering that question of like, great, if the pirates just sit around and party, like they do seem like a receptive, if not, forgiving audience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it just makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
Any other moments of whimsy comedy?
The final one for Hondo. I'm just quoting Hondo, but just when he's charging Kenobi the bill for service, basically the end, and it just, the stress on my guys. And then he says, a couple of them died, I think.
And I mean we talk about it a little bit more as we get into canon, but I like it at the end of like, you're trying to charge us for rescuing the people that you put in danger.
It
would have been a good scam if you planned it.
But all leads to that. I love that. It's a little bit of whimsy and wonder, but just him and that look back and nod to Katooni was real sweet. And the development of Hondo has been an interesting thing to track.
Yeah. And a good setup for his connection with Ezra, right? That seems like Hondo's always shifty, always got a question, but he seemed to really, truly like Ezra.
Yeah, and I was going to say my relationship with him, it's like back in 2014 when I was doing Jedi Alliance, I had my friend, a comedian, Joey Rockenstein, was on the show. I was going to come on the show, and he's like, can we talk Clone Wars? And I go, great. Absolutely. And he goes, I really want to talk about Hondo. And I was like, is Hondo the pirate guy? Like, what? didn't he just have like a cameo or something? He's like, no, Hondo. And I just, you know, you watch all these things. They go in into your mind sometimes. It was a different era. And now to see how much Hondo all the way through the Clone Wars, but how bad he is at times, how evil he is at times, how funny he is at times. I just completely underestimated him as a character. So happy to revisit that and get to love Hondo more.
Yeah, well, I love hearing that. Let's dive into the canon and lore connections, and I want to talk about Hondo a little bit because I think I've had the same, like, I liked him, I thought he was funny, but I've even said a lot on the podcast about, like, okay, but, like, he swings wildly from incredibly violently dangerous and silly fun uncle. Obviously, he's a little older in Rebels, so I think that kind of works, that he's mellowing out and things are not going as well for him, and he's more of a, can I just scrape by and make some deals, not like I'm a threatening adversary. So that growth always made sense to me, but I think I remembered my initial emotions from that second episode of this arc, where I'd like that first one, I like these kids, I liked Ahsoka, I was rooting for Ahsoka, I was like, pirates can't take out a Jedi ship, you know. And really feeling the terror of what he's doing. And feeling a little bit like, are we trying to have our cake and eat it too? That he can be that terrifying and then silly fun. And I had truly forgot that this episode, this arc, just deals with that. Absolutely crystal clear out front, right? Ahsoka says, you seem less hospitable than our last meeting. And Hondo says, my mood is based on profit. And today I'm in the mood for crystals. And then Ahsoka questions him again when he's agreed to work with them and has been supporting Katooni. And he says, well, today is a new day. And luckily today, I like children. So it is really pointing at his character and saying, like, we've played him as an absolutely deadly threat. And we have played him as an ally sometimes, an unreluctant ally. And we have played him as your fun uncle. And he's all those things, and he knows it. You know, I like that the arc just says that he's a complicated character.
Yeah. Again, way more depth than I ever gave him credit for. It's been fun to learn. I might need to go get a Hondo figure. And by the way, he's great at Galaxy's Edge.
He is. Yeah. So did you feel like this arc was having its cake and eating it too? Or did you feel like it was playing fair and saying, yep, he's a conflicted character with many sides?
No, I absolutely think it's playing fair, especially the way it's just absolutely addressed. And it leads to such, it's a quiet, subtle moment. It's a great acting choice from Hondo. and I don't know if you heard Jim Cummings voices him now, apparently. I think it was of him to just, you know, when it dawns on him a little bit earlier with Katooni kind of pleading with him to help and hitting him with that trust thing. But I love the end beat of him where it's just silent. She doesn't call out to him. He just senses it. He feels it. And I don't think in that moment he's having his cake and eating too. I just think he's acknowledging the truth she taught him, and maybe he'll do something with that, or maybe he won't, you know, as he goes on in his story. I think it's deeper than I would have thought earlier.
Yeah. And I feel like he is somebody who has everybody's out for themselves. The whole galaxy is about making a buck. I love making a buck. You know, I think that's true. And I think, he is ruthless and selfish, but he does seem to have a real soft spot for kids. You know, being there, he was there for Boba, right? And said, Boba, do you really want to make this choice? Is it the choice your father would have made, you know, to this relationship with Katooni, to the relationship with Ezra, to who knows what we'll see in the future with weird, dangerous, funny Uncle Hondo. So going back in the episode to just Ilum and Kyber crystals in canon, obviously this is not their first appearance in canon, but this is where a lot gets locked in our modern canon. Do you have any thoughts about that other than what we already discussed?
No, other than I really do love the expansion of this idea. It all makes sense. The Jedi's connection to the weapon, and I think leads to more powerful storytelling too. Even with stuff with Rey and her blade, her, you know, letting the force in, all that kind of stuff. So it really works for me. It's a good base for more storytelling.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I do have this question for you. Is the crystal cave, do you think it's a vergence in the force, like the tree cave on Dagobah? Like that moment with Biff, was that just like, some gases are releasing and it kind of looks like a monster? Or is the cave like, this kid's a scaredy Authorian, so we're going to scare him so he can try to push through it?
I kind of like the Force having a little bit of that kind of reaction. I'm not going to say having fun with anyone, but knowing what it needs to present with you, you know? Like, even the fact that Katooni's hers is high up above and she might have a fear of heights and just the lesson of risk and committing to that journey. But every time they picked the crystal and everything kind of faded away, I was like, is that what they just, that was what was there all along? And the rest was just what was, as Yoda would say, was, you know, you're trapped in your mind. So I guess I'd lean towards that, which might be the more realistic side, but I kind of like the idea of the Force going, oh yeah, oh, you need to see what your father is. Here's a vision of Vader in a lightsaber. You know, I like that idea too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think some of the vergences that we've seen with the Mirror Cave and the Dagobah mm-hmm. Tree Cave are, they're about trying to break you, I think, yeah. is the way I interpret them. And I feel like if you're to interpret the Crystal Cave this way, it is trying to help you past a fear and an anxiety.
Yeah. No, I like
but
that.
I do like the idea that you could look at it as Biff being force punked.
Yeah.
He made you think you saw a monster.
Sorry.
There is a use of wizard, which is lovely at the beginning. That when they learn what the gathering is, it's mm-hmm. there's so much like us. They're excited to build their lightsabers. That is a wizard.
Yes.
And then I want to be sure to talk about Professor Huyang. Similar in design to the one of the droids that shows up in Maz's castle, ME-8D9. Mm-hmm. Wikipedia says about that droid, once known to be an assassin, the droid later served criminals as a translator, although her origins were unknown. Some believe she began her life with the Jedi Order. I think that's one of those times where designs were close and some connections were being made.
Yeah.
So I wanted to throw out that connection. But I also wanted to ask you, Ken, just about the idea of Professor Huyang, the importance of the Jedi having this ancient droid in this very intuitive and spiritual role. How do you feel about that?
Right. Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't really thought of it too much in, organic versus mechanical side of point of view. I don't know. There's something very fairy tale about it for me, of this droid. You'd need it to be a droid, right? Unless it was Yoda himself or Maz can hang out there for thousands of years. I think the importance of the information being safe and secure and documented, every lightsaber, right? And whoever built it in his mind. So I really like it. It was very mystical. And I remember even loving it then, of just this idea of he's there all along. He's there in the center. So I'm behind this idea.
Yeah, I think it was really a let's challenge what we know. Let's challenge the audience mm-hmm. what they know. Let's challenge the younglings with what they know. Like, a droid's going to help us do this. Like, I forgot mm-hmm. that line was explicitly there to bring that forward. It just seems like a great way to have that idea of just, like, don't judge, you know, immediately by what you see. And I always am a sucker for old characters. I like how much they emphasize mm-hmm. how ancient Huyang is with the slow walk out.
Yeah.
And, you know, the weird kind of doubling of his voice, like his, his vocoder is not quite working anymore, you know?
Yeah. And even him making the jokes of, they're getting younger and younger. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, canon wise, there is the return of Fett's ship. I remember the first time watching Aurra Sing crash it going, hey,
right.
We got an issue here. And then clearly, Hondo's like, hey, I'll rebuild that. And at some point that I believe has been referenced, but I don't believe we've seen the story or read the story or heard the story. Obviously, Boba Fett gets it back. How do you feel about the arc of tracking that ship?
Oh, I actually loved it. Again, kind of forgot this little detail. But when we were doing the Clones Report, I even forgot that I knew it reappears, obviously, but this would be the spot. It makes a ton of sense. It's there with Hondo. I'd love to track it. I would love to keep going with it. It's like, you know, write your name on a dollar bill and see where it goes. So it is with Jango Fett's ship. At this time, it's a little bit more Jango's ship than Boba's.
Yeah.
So I love that idea.
Yeah, it was great. I love just the Clone Wars cleanup of coming back for that idea. And I love the weird mix of, like, it's pirates and Jedi younglings on what will be Boba Fett's ship. There was those cannons roaring. I love seeing it. So last thing for me, obviously there's a ton of aliens and fun species and masks, but didn't want to dig into all those details. So the last thing I wanted to talk about in canon is that hint that Huyang is going to tell the story of Yoda finding his lightsaber crystal. And Kenobi's like, not now, not now.
And I want to hear it. I want to hear it.
Right, right. To me, it has some good Star Wars rhyming with Maz Kanata saying that is a good question for another time about how she got Luke's lightsaber. But how do you feel about that? The idea that, oh, there's some adventure that Yoda had when he was young and we don't get to hear it. We get to imagine it.
Well, I love the idea that, you know, stately, sassy Yoda maybe got into some trouble, or maybe he got trapped in there for 19 days and he couldn't push out the ice there and he didn't try. And maybe that's part of what he's doing, not taking it out on these kids, but just going, I'm going to teach you what I didn't learn soon enough. I would love younger Yoda. You know, we're seeing what a 50-year-old version of the species looks like and acts like. So give me like a 150-year-old version of Yoda.
Yeah, I wonder exactly what age he was, and I wonder if he was a real hotshot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think he could maybe relate to Pedro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely.
Any other canon or lore thoughts for you?
Tiny little ones. I made it mentioned earlier, but just Katoni saying Ahsoka Tano, not Tano. Somewhere Palpatine's going, I thought it was Ahsoka Shino. I don't know. There, I love it. Gungi hearing the high-pitched squealing, harkening back to Chewie in the original trilogy, hearing that and that getting at Wookiees. I like that. And then Grievous at one point saying, dispense with the pleasantries.
Oh, yeah.
Love that one.
Yeah, I think Yoda has a so certain are you. Yeah. But yeah, dispense with the pleasantries. That is a great bad guy line.
Yes, it is. It is, yes.
Don't you say hello to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Was there anything in this arc that you disliked or questioned?
No. Which is often my answer, I understand. But we're kind of discussing these versus picking them apart. But I think going in, I had a lot of doubts of what was there. And the circus, and again, not that I disliked the idea of the circus in there, but that was... the bulk. I just always remember like, oh yeah, then they join a circus. Is that what, and it's like, it's such a key part, but small part of the whole story. So I think I got over some of that stuff there. And it's interesting that, you know, there was this thought of, if you read in some of the notes that Pablo had tweeted out that Lucas actually kind of, this almost became a spinoff series. And this was going to be this was actually like a movie shown at one of the early celebrations. And it makes, and watching it, I saw that note before I took the dive back into these, and it makes a lot of sense. It's very complete. And there's always that talk of a young, you know, Harry part of the Star Wars. You said earlier, you know, talking about that connection. It could work, and this is a good blueprint for what it would be like. So not so much a question, just a bigger question of would we ever get this again?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I did not get a chance to read some of those behind-the-scenes things that I sometimes do, so I love it when you have, because that's really insightful and very interesting. I basically watch this like a movie because I watch them one right after the other.
Yeah, same.
And it does work really well. There's nothing I disliked or questioned. I really love the circus. And in fact, I forgot to write down, Biff is so funny in the circus. They're all funny. But the way, you know, the one who is most fearful suddenly becomes almost a ham when they're on stage. You know, for some reason, as a theater person, I related to that. But Biff in the mask with the flowers and the big, almost Ithorian jazz hands. Oh,
yeah.
Love it. Loved it. The one thing that I would say is I think that as the arc goes on, we do get a more focus on some of the Padawans. And I really like Gungi. Obviously, Gungi is a fan favorite. One of the first times that we got to see a Wookiee as a Jedi and his amazing lightsaber with the wooden handle. All sorts of great stuff. And I feel like his kind of lesson of impatience doesn't get picked up on as much, that thread throughout the rest of the arc.
There you go.
So that's my glaring criticism.
We'll come back for that. We'll do a Gungi sequel.
Yeah. I almost didn't bring this up, but I think I need to, Ken. How much do you just shut off the where are they now question in your mind when you're watching these absolutely likable younglings?
They're all alive and they're gonna make cameos in Kenobi.
They retired and joined the circus, right? I mean, it's right there, right there.
Yeah, there's gonna be you know, I imagine they might have put up a fight, but unfortunately maybe it didn't go well. But I just, you know, I don't know, I like the idea of pull Gungi out and give me a comic series. And he already pops back in. I don't think you need a Gungi 5 issue arc, but you know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't mind one of these characters popping back up in Star Wars.
Well, I'm looking forward to the revelation that it was Gungi who rescued Grogu.
It's right there in front of us.
From the Jedi Temple.
It's right there in front of us. Yeah.
It's right there in front of us. Yep. The gift and the curse of the Clone Wars. You fall in love with these characters and you're like, wait, but what? But in my mind, they are the Animal Instincts, one of the great circus acts traveling the galaxy. Is there anything we haven't talked about that you wanted to touch on?
No, absolutely not. I mentioned the Hondo stuff. I wanted to kind of get through just because it's fun to revisit that. And the character that we and Rebels and you and I talking Clone Wars, I love him now. And I just can't believe I overlooked his true importance in place. So happy to now.
Yeah. No, I've this rewatch of this arc helped me enjoy Hondo even more. So I'm happy for that. I already mentioned the great David Tennant is Hu Yang. I think he does a phenomenal job, a fabulominalist job. So shout out to some Doctor Who in our Star Wars. Ken, if you could have a figure or merch of any kind from this arc, who or what do you want?
Well, we need all of Priego's team. We need them all. We need the whole circus. We need the Gamorrean clown. We need all of it. And you can throw in the Animal Instincts in there as well. You need a big, giant HasLab playset. Crowdfund this now.
Absolutely. I want action figures of almost every character. If I had to pick, Gungi, come on. Yep. There's a reason he's a fan favorite. I love Zat. I'd love it if he could come with a tablet that explodes. I'd love Biff in costume and out. Hu Yang would be great. But here's the thing I really want, Ken. They haven't done a lot of these with it's an action figure that comes with another thing. And I want the deluxe Gamorrean clown set that comes with a beautiful action figure and also a black velvet painting of the Gamorrean clown.
Yes. Hang that on the wall there.
Many merch dreams.
Also, we did that big Star Wars ranked our favorite jackets. Every one of the jackets on Ilum with these younglings could have been in that episode. Great jackets.
Oh, they're rocking some great jackets. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, that is our big look at the Gathering arc. Next up, George Lucas's stated favorite arc of the Clone Wars Season 5, Episodes 10 through 13, the D-Squad arc. It's all droids and Meeber Gascon and a clone. We cannot wait to get into that. It's one of the, I would say, if not controversial, one of the episodes that maybe fans are challenged by. Do you think that's fair, Ken?
I am one of the most challenged fans by this. My most challenged. And I have had dinner with Stephen Stanton and to his face said, I just don't know about Meeber, which he's laughed and he's taken it with a good grain of salt. But look, I also didn't love AP5 singing in space. And now I absolutely adore that moment. So I think I've been waiting for the Riff Tamsin. That's one thing. Gamorrean clowns. One thing. Me and Meeber Gascon. We're going to sit down and have a conversation and see where we are.
I have rewatched lots of Clone Wars. I don't think I've rewatched this arc because I was powering through. I saw the Maul was coming. There's a Mandalorian. There's a Maul. Let's go. Got to get through the droids. And I'm so excited to rewatch it and really engage with it. So looking forward to that episode. Ken, what should the moral of this episode of our podcast be?
The moral of this episode should be you don't need to run away to the circus. You're already in the circus. Find yourself in it and make your dreams come true on this podcast.
You might be doing flips right now and not know it. That's inspiring. Very inspiring. Where can people find us?
Hey, we're the Force Center Podcast. We found on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram, YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. And don't forget, you can get an audiobook on us if you'd like by going to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. We're in a lot of different spots, including Acast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and a lot more. Just search and you'll find us. Merch is available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. You can find me at Catnapsock or go to my website, catnapsock.com, for all the other things I do, including my radio show, Pop Rocket Radio, on Mixcloud. Joseph, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all sorts of adventures in the world of comedy, past, present, and future. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for the Animal Instincts, this has been the Clone Wars Report.
Witness history at Roland Garros, where old rivalries meet new talent on the clay battleground. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled access as the world's top players in tennis face off to see if the veterans maintain their dominance or if a fresh face rises to challenge them. Daily live coverage of the French Open begins Monday, May 20th. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.